Good morning, Stone.
Well, good morning.
How are you?
I am doing well. Looking forward to this episode. You know, we hijacked the beautiful Amy Otto's show this morning, but we're going to have some fun, I think.
I think so, too. It's been about 3 weeks since I've seen you. How have you been?
I've been well. I know I've seen you in like every studio, I think.
Just about, I think, every host.
You got to come visit some of our new studios. You know, we're doing a new one in Buckhead.
Yes.
And there's some rumblings that maybe downtown at 200 Peachtree, too. So that's going to be fun stuff.
That's going to be fun stuff. It's going to be real exciting.
Yeah.
Well, listen, we have a real good show today. I'd like to introduce our first guest, and that is Joe Granston, jazz dude, jazz great. And I am not really sure how to start this other than to say what I know about you. And I made a list because I've talked to people. I've learned that you're an entertainer. You love the stage and you love the audience. And I have learned that you're a teacher who appreciates both mastering the technique of your instrument and mastering the spirit of the notes that are played and sung. And I have learned that you are a mentor. You are willing to share your time and your knowledge with those who love, whose love and passion equals theirs. And I have learned that you've been a good friend to many through thick and thin and good and bad. And I've heard nothing but good. So
sounds like you talked to my mom.
Yeah, but don't tell her. I told her I wouldn't say. But Joe, I appreciate the time that you've taken to be on the show this morning. What I'd like you to do is tell me a little bit about your musical life. It goes back a ways, doesn't it?
Yeah, it sure does. I grew up in New York.
Uh-huh.
And my father, who kind of got me hooked on this music, on jazz music.
Uh-huh.
He was a great singer and piano player. And my grandfather was a trumpet player, played with Harry James and Tommy Dorsey and all the big bands from the 1930s and 40s. And so it was in the house. It was all, you know, it was always on the radio, Frank Sinatra, Nat King Cole, Miles Davis, whatever you would think. And my mother's side of the family is a great piano superstar named Carmen Cavallaro. And my mother was a choreographer. So music, I grew up with it. My uncle was on Broadway his whole life. And I knew early on, I knew when I was about 11 years old that I was going to be a musician the rest of my life. I didn't know I'd be a jazz trumpet player and singer. But I just knew that I couldn't
I
get
thought
away
I
from
was going to be a fireman when I was 11.
And aren't you putting out fires every day on the shows?
Well, I am, but it turns out I can't get within 3 foot of a grill. I mean, I'm so scared of fire. I don't know where that came from. But no, what a blessing to know that early on. Where your path lies.
It was nice growing up, man. You know, I was one of the few kids in school that knew what I was going to do. So I went for it. I mean, I practiced all day long as a child, and I played sports and did all that kind of stuff too. But I knew I was going to be a musician, and you don't really turn pro as a musician or you know, join a team, a hockey team or a football team. But when I was 19, I went on the road with Tommy Dorsey, and that's kind of what set it up all over Europe for a year.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a good experience, and then it kind of just been growing ever since.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Uh-huh.
So I have a big band, a 17-piece big band, and we play a lot of concerts and corporate events and parties, and I sing and play with the band, and then I also have a quartet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know,
I've heard
it just kind of ranges, you know, from what we're doing.
You you take the notes wherever they take you, and you do them proud.
Well, thank you.
Because I've heard you in various venues, the crowd has very much enjoyed listening. And we'll get into some more of that in a little bit.
Sure.
Part of the focus of this show is the fact that you do some things in Decatur, Georgia, at Twain's. Twain's Billiards, Tap, Food, whatever it's called. I don't exactly. Twain's. Everybody just called it Twain's.
Right.
And you have a jazz jam out there every Tuesday night starting at 9 o'clock. Tell me, it's been going on now how long?
The end of this month, the end of April, will be our three-year anniversary. The last Tuesday in April is our three-year anniversary.
Wow. Are you going to have a party?
Yeah, we're going to have a little hang.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay. So, what made you think to start this thing?
Well, Twain's... in Decatur. I live in Decatur, Georgia.
Oh, okay.
And Twain's was kind of my neighborhood bar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I moved to Decatur from Brooklyn, New York, and I had a nice bar right below my apartment in Brooklyn.
Uh-huh.
And after our performances, our gigs, all the musicians would meet there, and we'd hang out and have a drink or something to eat. And when I moved to Decatur, Twain's became that for me. And the owners there knew I was a musician, and they asked me if I would play a show there one night. And I had a Tuesday coming up available. So we did a Tuesday night there, and it went really well. And we had a nice crowd and a good time. And then he asked me to do another one the following week. And so I did two, and then I was sitting with the owner, I said, you know, it might be nice to have a jam session, a place for everybody to come and play, all the musicians to hang out.
Mm-hmm.
And we said, we'll give it a shot. So the first one we did, which is coming up on 3 years ago, was absolutely packed.
Wow.
And we knew right away we were onto something. You know? And it became, for those that haven't been to Twain's, there's a nice little stage area. I mean, it kind of looks like a music room.
It really does, you know? Yeah.
And they do have music there every night of the week. But Tuesday's jazz night, and it just continues to grow. And people from all over the... all over Georgia. People from way up in Dahlonega come down for the session, and people in Valdosta will drive, you know, hours to come.
I've met a lot of them as I sit out there listening, which the first time I came out was the end of January.
Okay.
And a friend had told me about it, so I came out, and I'm seeing all these people. I'm, what?
Yeah.
And then finding out how far a lot of them came.
Yeah.
Wow. And they bring their instruments to play, some sing.
Yeah. They sing, they play, they, you know,
you can
sometimes
just show
we'll
up with your instrument?
It's an open mic. I mean, it's a jazz session, so, you know, if you're
right. Don't show up with spoons.
Yeah.
Or unless you can play them in jazz style.
Right, exactly.
That's really cool, though. So what do you do the rest of the week? It sounds like a good gig if you can get it. What do you do the other six nights?
You know, I work a lot. I'm always booking my band, whether it's the quartet all the way up to the big band. We do a ton of private events, private parties. We also play at a lot of local places, and then we travel quite a bit. We play a little bit out west in California, a little bit in New York, and, you know, just always trying to build up your name and build up your following, and hopefully it just continues to get better. But I'm lucky. I mean, I'm playing 45 gigs a year.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah,
that's
busy. And
I don't even cook that many days a year.
And he's cooking 340-something days a year.
Cooking,
you're
cooking. Yeah, I'm cooking, baby.
Well, here's what I want to know, because I see it in ball players. I see it in business people. And I'm always trying to crack the code. There are a lot of very talented baseball players walking the halls of junior colleges or building houses down in Pensacola, where I'm from, that are every bit as talented as people in the major leagues. It's not talent. It's not intellect. And I sense maybe the same thing is true in the music field. What is that differentiating factor that you're a very successful musician with a rewarding career, and someone with perhaps almost equal talent is working a dead-end job?
Come on, Stone. I'm kidding.
So, I mean, what's the secret sauce, man?
I mean, that's a good point. And you know, I do feel I'm successful, and I am lucky and happy about my career, but there's people so much more successful than I am that are selling millions of records and touring and under the, you know, so I'm always trying to get to that level, and there's people that are trying to get maybe to where the level I'm at, and it is very difficult, and I just think you have to continue to get better and continue to take your time and create a niche for yourself, you know. I've paid a lot of dues over the years playing clubs for free, or for the door, or for the tip jar. I'm 40 years old now, but I've been doing it since I was 18 or 19 years old. And and slowly, over the course of time, I've created a following and created a successful career. But, I mean, there's some people that when they're 18 or 19 are in the right place at the right time, and there it is, man. And there's other people that, you know, burn out at 30 or 35 years old and just say, man, I can't do this anymore. I got to make a living. I got to have health insurance. I got to have retirement.
Right.
But I, you
gotta
know,
eat.
I love it. And no matter what, if I was a millionaire, or if I was making, you know, just a little bit of money, I love it. And I'm just going to keep trying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at some point you have to make some hardcore decisions, but it's a great career.
Well, that brings us back to talking about the business of the business, because, you know, as you well know, probably a whole lot better than I do, that there's a lot of young people that think, well, I'm talented. You know, I've got the looks. I can do whatever it is. And, you know, my mama loves me and my friends love me. And, you know, my church group loves me and you know, my buds love me. And everywhere I go, people say, you're great. And they expect it to be handed to them on a silver platter. They don't want to work for it. How do you deal with that kind of attitude when these kind of people come and approach you and want you to help them or endorse them? I mean, how do you just say, you know, I ain't got time for your baby ace?
I never really take that approach. I mean, you know, the music that I'm in love with and that I make my career out of is jazz music. And you know, first of all, you never get into jazz if you're looking at it from a financial standpoint.
That's a good point.
Yeah. And really, it's really all about the music. It's not about me. And even in my career, it's about preserving the music and preserving the art form. So a lot of times young guys will come up and can I give them a quote for their CD project or can I play on their CD? And I'm always happy to do it. I'm always excited to do it. And, you know, you just have to keep promoting it and keep encouraging, especially the young guys to because, you know, when I was that age, I wanted the same thing. I wanted to be 22, 21 and get a record deal with a major label and tour around the world and be this famous guy. But it just doesn't really happen that way unless you're one of the very, very few people that get lucky enough to do that.
It's like being an author. I'm a writer. Yeah, I've got some books. But, you know, people go, oh, you must know John Grisham. Yeah. No. because it doesn't – not all things happen to all people in the same way. And you know, he's got a different scenario than me.
Yes.
Though I think actually that I can write better than him. But that's not the point.
she had to get that in there.
I just had to get that in there. Yeah. But though some may disagree. But it's – I can see that if I was to go up to him and say, you know, oh, I've got this, you know, I'm just so great, and not be humble about it, I guess he would probably just put it, you know, like a little fly, swap me away.
Maybe.
So
but,
how
you know,
do you handle that?
You know, I can kind of, especially at Twain's, especially at that jam session, I can tell right away if somebody can play or not, or if somebody's full of baloney or not, you know.
Right.
Usually the ones that have the most confidence that come up to you with all the talking like you're talking about and all the self-praise are the ones that don't have what it takes necessarily at that point.
Right.
And it's the quiet ones that get up on stage and just blow the crowd away with their playing or their singing that you know and you really want to help.
Right.
But like I said before, it's really, you know, especially Twain's, I wanted to create an atmosphere that was friendly, that a beginner could get up and be on stage with a seasoned professional and not feel nervous, I mean, there's a little bit of nervousness there, but not get vibed.
Yeah.
There's so many jam sessions where the vibe is negative and where musicians are afraid to get up on stage. I just wanted something that was friendly. And these people like you're talking about that really want that help and that are young and really, really almost expect something, it's cool. They just come up, they do their thing, and their playing speaks for itself.
And that's true. Well, excuse me.
Where is this place? This Twain sounds like a marvelous. But now I've heard of Cafe 290, which I haven't been. I keep telling myself I'm going to go to. But this Twain's place. Tell me about
this.
Well,
Twain's is Decatur. Twain's is, you know, Cafe 290 is right around the corner from
Sandy
Springs.
Yeah.
And that's where I play with my big band.
Oh, it is? Okay.
Twice a month.
So I can come see you there.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. But
is
Twain's
first
is
and third
first and third Monday
Mondays
every month.
At Cafe 290.
That's
but
a great
Twain's.
Venue. Twain's is Decatur. The best way I describe it is just across the railroad tracks. I mean, you know, this sounds like some southern stuff here. I'm from New York City. Just go across the railroad tracks, and you'll see it on the left.
But
really,
it really is just
downtown
across the railroad.
Decatur.
Three-legged dog outside.
Yeah. You'll see the tree that's not there anymore. But it's a great place, man. People come and they play pool. The food is great. And on Tuesdays, the jazz is just killing. I mean, you were there last night, Angela, and it's packed.
I know.
Packed. We start at 9 o'clock. We finish at 12:30. We have to finish at 12:30 because of the sound ordinance.
Right.
And I don't have a minute to myself. I'm spending the whole time trying to get musicians up there to play. There's
right.
so many.
They
no
walk
break.
In, and once you come off stage, because you do play off and on with various things, they will approach him and let him know. You know, they're
ready.
Put me
they
in the queue.
Play, yeah.
He keeps this running queue in your head, and I don't think you've ever written it down anywhere, have you?
No. A lot of times I'll introduce somebody, and I'll say the wrong name. But I mean, 12:30 will come, and everybody has had a chance to play. Sometimes only one song, usually only one song, because there's so many people. But usually there's only been one or two times where we've had a stop at 12:30, and there's been four or five folks that haven't had a chance.
Right.
And they understand. I mean,
when
it's going that well, you just a lot of great musicians will come and just sit and listen. You know, because of the talent that's there.
I know a lot of people who are not musicians, and that's all they do. They just come in and they pop in every Tuesday night just for 20 minutes, 30 minutes, an hour after they finish doing their other evening things. And I've talked to them, too, and they're like, oh, this is great. They love it. Why do you think Twain's is committed to the music scene?
Well, the owners, Ori and Eitan, are music lovers. Mm-hmm. They're educators, they're teachers, and they really feel like it's an important part of the culture, important part of the scene.
Yeah.
Like I said earlier, it's not just jazz. They have bluegrass music, they have country music, they have rock and roll music, R&B music, and just depending on the night of the week.
Right.
And they support it all, and they really want the community, not just in Decatur but Atlanta, to know that they support that.
Right.
In other words, there's no cover charge.
Right.
Just come in, listen to the music. If you have a beer, if you have something to eat, great. If you don't, enjoy the music, because they only have the finest musicians to play there.
Right.
You can't just get a gig there. You have to go through a whole process.
Yeah.
You know, and I was really impressed with that. Like I said, before I started playing there, I was just hanging out there, and I knew them, and I kind of saw how they did everything. And
right.
I've lived in New York most of my life and worked at millions, you know, tons of clubs, and I was really impressed with Twain's. That's why I knew I was going to enjoy working there.
Couple of quick questions. One is, I know you make a full-time living with music. So high five to you.
Thank you.
Because that's hard to do.
Not everybody can do
that. Not everybody can do. There's a lot of musicians have day jobs. Mm-hmm. And then they seek their passion at night. Yeah. But that's okay, because that happens.
Mm-hmm.
They're still true to their music, and they're professional about it. But you're able to do that, and I'm glad. But what has been the biggest hurdle to your profitability, do you think?
Hurdle of profitability. Creating a following has probably been the toughest thing that I've had to do, because obviously the more people that follow you, the more people that enjoy your music, the more money you're going to make.
Hell yeah.
I'm very, very lucky. I kind of thought early on that if I played for a fair amount of money during the week at different venues, restaurants, little clubs, even if it wasn't a lot of money, whatever that means,
yeah,
it would be a way for us to get paid to almost rehearse and perform and get over our nerves as when we were younger.
Sure.
It's also a way to self-promote.
Mm-hmm.
Most of my jobs, now I've never advertised, and like I said, I do 340 gigs a year. Most of my jobs come out of those little jobs that I do during the week. Somebody will be having dinner and say, hey, he'd be great for our daughter's wedding, or he'd be great for our Christmas party or mm-hmm. holiday event.
Mm-hmm.
So I haven't, to be honest with you, there wasn't too much of a hurdle. It just fell into place over time. And I think because I started so young and I was so dedicated, I didn't mind working every night, because it's a couple hours a night, 3 hours a night, and I love it.
Right.
So I haven't had that hurdle. Now, if you ask me, you know, what does it take to become Harry Connick Jr. or Michael Bublé or, you know, anybody, Kenny G, just as successful, then you have some hurdles you got to cross.
Right.
Then it's a major, major thing.
Right.
But I've done my homework. I practiced hours and hours a day, and I'm not waiting to get to that level. If that ever happened, that would be fantastic. But
your life is good as it is.
Life is great, man. Yeah,
See, that I think is a great attitude to have, because there you have satisfaction on a daily level, instead of waiting for this big goal that you may not ever reach. But if you do, great. If you have a quality of life now, and you're married and you have a child, how's your child?
17 months.
Oh, yeah. I mean, my goodness. Look what you've got now. How happy.
Yeah, life
and
is great.
I know that you can appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
And on a daily basis have a satisfaction in seeing good for your hard work.
Yeah.
Is something that a lot of people never get. And I would like to be able to see that they can get that. One quick question. What's your very last thought for that you would like to leave people with before we close out your segment here?
Regarding like the Twain's music scene, the Decatur music scene?
Regarding life, regarding music, regarding something you've always wanted to say and you feel is important.
This is anything. Where you're supposed to be really brilliant.
Yeah, brilliant.
Forget about it. It's 9 a.m. or whatever it is. I just got home.
It is 10:23.
What time is it? 10:23. Well, I mean, you know, my message now as I'm growing a little older is just preserving the music and preserving the art form. You
mm-hmm.
know, jazz music. You know, I love it. I've always loved it. It's part of my life. It's part of my family.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said earlier, my father
mm-hmm.
kind of hit me to it at a young age, mm-hmm. and my grandfather. So it's part of me. It's kind of what I am. And I don't necessarily go out and preach it all the time, but I certainly play all the time and try to educate and keep it alive for a lot of different reasons. But it's just so powerful and
yeah.
feeds the soul And every day is a happy day, man, if you can pick up your horn or grab a mic and sing a tune and make somebody else forget their troubles for a little while, you know.
Well, that's great, and I sure do appreciate it. Let me make you happy real quick, okay?
Right here on the air, Angela.
Right here on the air.
We don't have the same FCC restrictions.
Yeah, this is internet.
Okay, that's right.
This is your pay for today. A box of Honey Nut Cheerios that I promised you last night when I saw you. You wanted to know. Oh, and
the man does not work for free.
No, he does not, and that is a lesson for all.
Oh, look at that.
And it came with a little book for the baby.
Oh, how beautiful. You are so sweet. This plus the $400 check you promised is going to be great.
Yeah, and it's in the mail. Yeah, I promise. Definitely, for sure.
Well, I had a good time. I'm glad you had me on.
Well, I thank you very, very much, and it's been great, and I hope to do it again.
Sure.
And I know you have a gig you have to get to, so we are going to let you go.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
All right, Angela.
Appreciate
Take
it
care,
very much.
Hey, Joe, it's been a pleasure, man. Thanks. And I hope you'll come back sometime and maybe bring a few members from your band.
I'd love to.
Oh,
I'd
yeah.
Yeah. Do you ever do a show at, like, you know, 4 p.m.?
Absolutely. We'll make it happen.
We'll find something.
Or maybe a remote broadcast of Twain's. Wouldn't that be cool?
Yeah. We've been approached by a couple different stations about doing a live thing there for the jam session. So think about that.
Yeah. Let's be the first, shall we?
But you know what I want to do next time we do a show is if I can bring a guy or two from my band.
Absolutely.
Can they bring their instruments?
Yes.
We'll play a 30-second song for you.
You got it.
I know
Absolutely.
They love that.
That would be wonderful. Yeah.
Well, have a great day. I appreciate it.
Great. Right, Thank man. You very much. And you drive safe, okay?
Okay.
And next up, we have Andy Orland. Andy, how are you today?
I'm doing great.
Good.
Very well.
I'm glad. I know you had a late night last night, too, playing at Maddie's in Decatur.
Well, not as late as you. If you went from Maddie, you were at Maddie's.
Then I went to Twain's.
Yeah.
I went over there swinging to the jazz.
Actually, I think I know where I'm going to go after we finish playing, because we finish about 9:30, and I can go over there and hear some good music.
Oh, I think you would very much enjoy it. So what we did was we sort of started with who you are and your music history. I'd like to ask you a little bit about how you got started in music. Why?
I think like a lot of teenagers, I heard music on the radio. I mm-hmm. heard the Beatles. I had a real affinity when I heard Eric Clapton's and John Mayall's Blues Breakers, and it's just I wanted to copy that.
Uh-huh.
And so I was fortunate that I had an older brother that played guitar, so when I told my dad I wanted a guitar, he kind of gave up with him, and so he helped me get a guitar, and I kind of watched him, and he was playing, my older brother was playing in bands, so I kind of watched him and learned from him, and then just really just listened to records and copied what I was hearing.
Wow.
Never really learned formally.
As have a lot of musicians. That's how they got their start.
Right. I actually, at one point, I went and had a guitar teacher and was learning to read music, and when I was in early in college, I took some classes in music theory, so I actually can very slowly read music, but mm-hmm. I'm not a, I can't.
You
I
can't
play,
really,
I play
really
ear.
Truly sight read. Yeah,
no.
you play by ear. But you do play quite well, and you
well,
play
you.
With spirit. How I got to know you and the King Brisket Boys was out at Maddie's one night with a sign that said, Maddie's, come hear blues, and said, the Pork Brothers. And I thought, Pork Brothers? What the heck? So I go out there and I order myself some ribs and iced tea. And next thing I know, you and Scott and John and the other Andy.
That's correct.
And Stan, I think,
Stan
was out
Ruffin.
There that first night, too, mm-hmm. on the drums. And I'm hearing these songs I've never heard before, a lot of them. And so you guys take a break and like, who are you?
And did we ask you that? Or
you
did you
asked,
ask us that?
Y'all came up to me and said, who are you and why are you here? And that's how I got to know you guys and that sort of thing. But tell me a little bit about, I got to explain, Pork Brothers is on the sign because Maddie's only sells pork and chicken. They don't do beef.
Originally, Scott started out playing with a friend of his. It was a duo. And Scott and I had played together mm-hmm. and, right out. We knew each other in elementary and high school. And after high school, we were actually visiting with some friends at Emory in Oxford. And we were sitting outside, and I had my guitar, and he had harmonica. And we were just messing around, and it just clicked. It felt right. And so we came back to Atlanta and talked about getting a band together and eventually did put a band together. At the time, it was called the Cliftones. We were pretty original. We lived on Clifton Road. That's about the best we could come up with. And Scott and I played off and on for probably 5 years. We played pretty regularly on the blues scene in the late 70s, early 80s. There was the Rose's Cantina, the Big Dipper Lounge, which was not a great place. Good old days. And Buckhead had live music. And Capri Ballroom, we'd play there. So we played regularly for a number of years. And then I got married and moved away, moved up to Athens, Georgia, and because of my career at the time, there just wasn't any time to play music.
Sure.
Scott went about his world, played some in between, and we ran into each other a couple of years ago, and he invited me to come play with this duo, and then the other gentleman that was playing moved away, and so it became our duo.
Right.
And then our friends from John Wiley showed up to listen to us, and we invited him to come play, and then Andy came up to hear us, and we invited him to come play, and we pretty much played as a four-piece for a while.
Right.
And I've known Stan Ruffin for most of my adult life, and Stan's a highly qualified professional musician who actually is known more for his singing. And I invited Stan to come play drums with us. He hadn't been playing drums for a long time, mostly singing and sitting in with others on guitar and bass. And that begat what we're doing. And they were called the Pork Brothers originally. And they claim they don't have enough letters to put on the marquee to say the brisket.
Oh, is that what it is?
I think we're going to go back in their box and find it. But they seem to insist on putting the Pork Brothers up. But
it's a running joke with anybody who shows up. So right.
I brought brisket in there one night and served it to my friends just so I could kind of nudge them along.
They didn't take the hint, though, did they?
No, not yet.
But Maddie's is a great place. They got great food, and they've got crowds that come out at different times. They have music just about every night, different acts. And you guys are on Tuesday night from 7 to 9. They're on Scott Boulevard there in Decatur. Mm-hmm. Very easy to find. Plenty of parking and good food, too. And plus the musical dinner is wonderful.
Right, and there's music, and there's a lot of good music at Maddie's. I know that Chicago Joe was supposed to be here.
Yeah, he's running late.
And he does a great thing with the youth program. Mm-hmm. What he does on Thursday nights, anybody who has a chance ought to go by and hear what he's doing, because he really helps these kids learn how to be a band.
Yes, it's a marvelous thing.
Oh, it is. It's great.
You
can go on YouTube and watch the video of what these kids are doing. It's great.
Oh, I took some video out there with my iPhone. It was great. I couldn't believe how good it turned out. I love my iPhone,
by
the
way. I can tell you that when I started playing when I was 13 and 14 and 15 years old, what I would have done for somebody like him that was positive and reinforced what they were doing, Lord knows I'd be a better player now.
Do you think you would have, maybe with that kind of support and that kind of training early on, do you think you might have been able to used music as your actual career as opposed to a second career kind of fun thing that you do now, or how?
It's hard to say. I think there are types of music that lend themselves to making a living, and then there's types of music that we've enjoyed playing, the rhythm and blues, that if it's a hard life if you're going to try and make a living. Now, some people have been able to perform, and they teach music and make a eke out a living. But the people I knew, including Tinsley Ellis, who was starting out about the same time we were, he was at Emory when we were playing around, and Tinsley's made a career of it, and I don't know, I don't know what his income's like, but he works a lot and he drives around the country a lot. And so
so you don't want that kind of life, really?
Well, life happens when you're busy doing
other things. This is true.
And I started a family. I got two wonderful girls. And just the idea of being out on the road touring was less enticing to me than it was when I was 18 years old.
Right, right.
If only you had learned to rap, you could have been a contender. Right?
Rap blues. Good idea.
There's a niche.
There's a niche. There's a niche for everything. Just check the internet.
That's right.
It will let you know that is the case. So you use your music as an outlet for feeding your soul, for what?
Yeah,
because it's not the money. I've seen.
We made about a buck and a half last night apiece. That's big bucks.
That's big bucks.
Plus
yeah.
Plus you get to pick home some barbecue.
Yeah, that really good stuff. Right. So it's not the money. I mean, you guys are. This is your fun. You're paying this, but yet this is a integral part to me. It seems of the music scene because there's a lot of this going on. People who just enjoy it, but that you know they really don't want to do this full-time gig thing. And so they get their fun out and their passion out on stage, and they're good, and that's all they need.
Well, I think you were there last night, and you know, we're hit and miss because we don't play every night. And I think one of the things that Joe alluded to, and I agree, is it was only about 2 years ago that I really started playing again regularly. I've always played and messed around occasionally with friends and, you know, entertained myself. But when you start playing in an organized group and you're working on set lists, it's just you get better and better. And so we enjoy the process. Mm-hmm. It's almost like a practice, as he says, in front of an audience. And watching you kind of sing along or tap your toes, it means that it's working and that people are paying attention. And that's what we do it for. I guess it's a little bit of ego. But it's really it's only ego in the sense that we want other people to enjoy what we're doing. Why play in front of an audience? You might as well stay in your house if you just want to play for yourself. We enjoy, in fact, we enjoy it more when the house is full and people are up and dancing or just people are tapping their toes. You know, it means that we're creating a groove, and that's what it's all about.
Right. I'll tell you one thing that I like about live music that I don't like about recorded. There's some music that works very well recorded, but then live music, and take case in point, your band, I've heard you play some of the same songs every time I'm there, but y'all throw in something different every now and then and surprise me.
Sometimes accidentally.
And you shouldn't have told that little
thing. Oh, no, I think that's a well-known secret. So, part of the advantage of performing live is also learning how to play through mistakes, really. I mean, you're playing on the grand band with five or however many people you're playing with, and you're human, and you maybe somebody misses a note or somebody makes a change. In the midstream, sometimes we have a set list and we have songs that we rehearse, and we know that here's where a solo is going to go. And as an example, last night I was playing a solo on a song, and Scott leaned over and said, "Take another one."
Right.
And so we have to eyeball the rest of the band and let them know that we're not going to go to this change here that's going to be a bridge. We're going to play another solo. And when they catch on, the more you play, the easier it is to catch on.
Right.
When Andy first joined us, he probably hadn't performed with the band in 30 years.
Oh.
And so those cues, those little eyeball cues were tough, and we'd have to play through him playing. I mean, and it wasn't his fault.
It's a learning process, right? Yeah.
You know, we'd be in the key A, and we'd gone up to D, and he was still at A because he didn't see that bridge, and he was making sure he was doing the song right. And you've seen a dramatic change in all of us, in that we catch those little cues. And the really good bands, the professional bands, they do it, and nobody ever notices it.
Right.
And so, whereas the Eagles, you know, they made their claim to fame was when you go to hear them live, they sound just like the record. And it's really remarkable.
It is remarkable.
They can go out and perform it just like the record, and that's a talent in and of itself. But a lot of bands will make changes. And I heard Eric Clapton once live hit a note that was flat. I mean, remarkably flat. And the way he overcame that is he played the same note again. He just, you know, it wasn't a mistake. I meant to do that.
That was funny.
And so I think that's part of that, of performing. And as Joe said, getting over that nervousness that your people are watching you and realize that they're along for the ride with you.
Mm-hmm.
And so we do play things a little differently. And we really wish we could catch it in a bottle sometimes, because sometimes we play it differently and it works. And we all go, and we play another song right after, and we go, what the heck did we do? And hopefully one of us remembers and we can go back and put that into the song.
Yeah. And sometimes even whoever's singing will throw in a little something.
Absolutely.
Change the words up, and I found myself, my head will pop up.
Well, we're singing to you, Angela.
Oh, well, Now I know. Okay, great. So, but I enjoy that. And that, I think, is part of the live experience that people need to know more about and they need to be able to get, because it is important. It's a dance between the audience and the performers.
Absolutely. And I think that that goes back to what I said was the reason that we do it is not for the, you know, we all enjoy our instruments. We enjoy, I enjoy the sound the guitar makes. I enjoy the different sounds I get. I enjoy playing with the band. I enjoy the rhythms. And the audience interaction is just one next is the next step that allows us to connect. And sometimes we make a change in midstream because of what we what's happening in front of us. And that's kind of the fun and excitement of it.
I saw a band one time, a little indie band play, and the lead singer, it was his band, and it was pretty much his way or the highway. And if anybody wanted to do something different, and there were several musicians and a couple of backup singers that I thought made it better, you know, he'd just almost have a meltdown. I don't see that lasting too long for him, you know, megalomaniac kind of thing. I can't imagine that that is a productive mindset to have when you're in a band.
If you know, it depends on whose band it is and how much leadership abilities that person have. Some really creative people can run a band that way and say, it's this is my band and this is what I expect. And you're not, I might be here to improvise, but you're not. And I expect the players and to
follow my lead.
And I think as long as everybody buys into it, it works.
They're being paid well enough.
There's been very successful people, very successful musicians that
Yanni.
Well, I don't know much about Yanni.
That's the way he was. It was his way or no way.
You hear stories about all kinds of musicians, even Chuck Berry, who didn't even have his own touring band. He would come into a town, and they'd have a pickup band, and Chuck would tell him, play 1-4-5, and here's the beat, and do it. And if somebody did something that Chuck didn't like, he'd stop in the middle of a song. And Chuck Berry is someone that I adore. I mean, what he did early in his career, his songwriting ability, his lyrics, there's very few that have achieved what he has.
Yeah.
But later in his career, when he was just getting the money, you know, he'd show up, and if he didn't like what you were doing, he'd stop the song, you know, don't do that. I think there was a movie about Chuck Berry, and he was telling Keith Richards he was playing the stuff wrong. Keith learned it from Chuck. So. But, you know, there's a lot of musicians that do that, and there's others that inspire their group to improvise and get joy out of that. I really liked what Joe was saying earlier about how he runs. I've never been to his show.
You've really got to.
But the fact is that, and much like Joe does on Thursday nights at Maddie's, is that he inspires these people and he empowers them and he gives them a sense of he makes them feel good about what they do, and even when they make mistakes, because everybody does, he encourages them, and I really like what he had to say, because it's, even if you're doing it for a living, it's still for fun. You shouldn't do anything that's not fun.
Well, this is true. Well, I want to tell you that I very much enjoy listening to you guys, and I'm, of course, hoping that people will come out more into the Decatur scene, the music scene, and embed themselves in it and get to know you guys better, of course. What is your last thought that you would like to leave people with today? Now it's your turn to be brilliant.
I don't have any brilliance in me. Come on out to Maddie's any night during the week. We're there on Tuesday nights, and just come out and enjoy the music and encourage the owner to get his beer license. I think we'd have bigger crowds if he'd get his beer license
back.
Yeah,
I think so, too. Yeah,
maybe you're listening to me, Jeff.
That'll work itself out.
That's a hint.
That's a big hint. Yeah, a lot of people have been giving them that hint, so we think that'll probably work itself out.
I certainly hope so.
Yeah. Well, Andy, Orlin of the King Brisket Boys, also known as the Pork Brothers, on Tuesday night. This was a lot of fun. And I want to, I know Joe Grandston had to leave, but I want to thank him for being a guest on the show and for you for being a guest on the show. We had a couple of other people scheduled. Joshua Crook, who's a young player in the music scene there in Decatur also, but he's also a musician, a soldier musician, and the U.S. Army required his attendance this morning, and so he pretty much has to do what Uncle Sam says.
Thank you, Josh. We appreciate your service.
So we would have talked to him, but he's also a teacher, and he also plays in a brass quintet and a brass band. And this is another part of the music scene where, you know, a five-piece brass quintet. Stone, a five-piece brass quintet.
Pretty cool.
Yeah. I had no clue how good that stuff sounds.
I think there's, you know, you enjoy music, and
oh, yeah.
That's why we're doing this. And there's some, you know, there's just all kinds of quirky things happening in town that
there are,
if you have time to get out and listen to it, there's great music everywhere.
There are trombones, just trombones that play together. Trombone is beautiful. There's trombone is beautiful. Who knew that a bunch of trombones playing together would be beautiful? But I'm hearing these things, and this is some great stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Our last great guest would have been Chicago Joe Jones, but obviously something happened, and I'm really worried about him because this is not like him at all. Chicago Joe, let me tell you a little bit about him real briefly. You know him well, Andy. He
your bottle of water.
Lost his watch.
He runs the teen jazz jam at Maddie's on Thursday evenings from 7 to 9.
Mm-hmm.
Runs a little later sometimes. Parents bring their kids out there, children who from as young as 8. I've seen as young as 8. Playing drums like nobody's business.
Oh, that's cool.
Jamming with older musicians.
Yeah, it's a tribute to Joe that he does that, that he actually
that's
he
great.
Gives them a... it's really, again, so many musicians growing up, people were telling him to quit making that noise, and here's Joe, an older guy, who's not only encouraging but giving them a venue. He's given up his night. That used to be Joe's night, and he's given it up to the kids to give them a venue to play.
That right. rocks.
Well, that's we have Joe Grandston is joegrandston.com. You do not have a website.
No.
King Brisket Boys.
Soon. KingBrisketBoys.com.
Soon to be. Soon to be. Chicago Joe Jones has his at Rock and Blues Camp and ChicagoJoeJones.com. Rock and Blues Camp is where he does summer camps for these kids to come out and jam. And
nice.
Like cheerleading camp, only for musicians.
Yeah.
It's totally cool.
Angela, I have one of my neighbor's son is one of those that studies with other guitar players but attends his camp and actually plays on the Thursday nights. And he's 15 years old, and he's not very far behind me. You know, I've got experience, and I have more instinctive stuff I can do with the band, and I've heard a lot more. But his talent is eons above mine, and Joe gives him a venue, and you can go on YouTube and watch these kids. It's I mean, they're good.
They're good.
Some nights they're better than us. Especially when we haven't had a hard day at work.
See, all they had was a hard day at school. So, you know, let's put apples to oranges here. It's not a comparison. Well, Stone, what'd you think about the show today?
This was a blast. We got to do more shows like this.
We're going to have to. We got to get live out at Twain's.
Yeah,
definitely.
That sounds like fun.
Yeah, I think it would be great. So I'll talk to him and we'll see what we can do.
All right.
We'll get on the technicality aspect of it later. Well, this was fun, gentlemen. I want to thank them all for being on Atlanta Business Radio. This was a wonderful time that I had with you guys. I'm Angela Durden, your guest host for today, sitting in for Amy Otto. And until next time.